Okay, if you haven't had opportunity to be with us before, we're looking at what God requires of people in families. So we're looking at, really the title of the lesson is A Godly Family. And we spent the last 2 weeks really just talking about how the world views family and how God views family. And then last week I introduced to you the idea of the first topic we'll look at, and what does God require of husbands? And I think it'd be good that we begin by looking at Genesis, the second chapter. In Genesis chapter 2, beginning in verse 24, remember here, the back part of Genesis chapter 2 is the creation of Eve. And after Eve has been presented to Adam, then this is what is said. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And so as we start talking about husbands, we have a problem. And the problem is a husband is only half of the equation. There's a husband and a wife, and they are one flesh. And so a lot of what we'll talk about with husbands, we in turn talk a little bit about wives. It's sort of hard not to talk about husbands without talking about wives. We'll talk about wives next week, but this week I really want to focus in on husbands. And when we talk about husbands, there's two responsibilities that they have, and I mentioned the first one to you last week. And what was that? What's the first and most important responsibility that a husband has?
Love your wives, he's a Christ of the church.
All right. Love. That's the first and most significant responsibility. Because if you get that one wrong, the other one's going to be a disaster, is really what it boils down to. So let's go to Ephesians, the fifth chapter. And we'll start by talking about love. Ephesians chapter 5. And if someone would read verses 25 through 33. And while someone's reading Ephesians 5:25-33, I want you to pay attention to how many times God through Paul commands husbands to love their wives. All right, verse 25. Someone go ahead for us.
Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, and that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it, even as the Lord the church. For we are members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause a man shall leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they too shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, that I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife as himself, and the wife see that she reverenced her
husband. All right, so how many did you get? How many times did Paul say that husbands are supposed to love their wives? Depending on how you count it, it could be anywhere from 3 to 5, right? And I think that speaks to the significance. Not that we can't quite decide on whether it's 3 or 5, but that Paul here references this over and over again, that husbands should love your wives. So what exactly does it mean to love your wife? What does that mean? Does it mean telling your wife that you love her? What does that mean?
It says as you do yourself. So it means how do you take care of yourself? How do you treat yourself?
All right. So God defines for us what it means in two ways. He defines how husbands ought to love their wives. So one is as yourself. And that makes sense, right? Because Paul here quotes Genesis chapter 2:23 that they become one, right? So in a way, loving your wife is like loving yourself, because Your wife is you, is an extension of you. Okay, so one way that God defines what it means for a husband to love his wife is like he would love himself. And what's the other way?
As Christ loved
the church. And I think that helps us, that in and of itself, helps us understand what it means to love your wife. Because there in verse 32, this is a great mystery. All right, so all the way up until this point, really well, verse 25, where Paul says that husbands love your wives just as Christ loved the church. Well, then after that statement is made, then he just starts talking about husband and wife's relationship. And then in verse 32, it says, "This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church." Remember two classes ago we talked about how if you can't get the family right, if you don't understand God's plan for the family, you're going to have a hard time understanding God's plan for the church. Well, this is one of the verses that we would use to show that. Because if you don't understand how a husband and a wife are supposed to relate, then you might not understand how Christ feels about the church. So here, this is the example. Christ's love for the church is how we ought to love our own wives. The word used here is agape. It's the word that's also used for God's love towards man, Christ's love towards the church. It implies that the husband's love for his wife is not based on any conditions like how well she looks or what she does. Now, most of the love of the world is self-serving, isn't it? And it's the reason why we see so many marriages dissolved. But this kind of love is not that. It includes an appreciation for beauty, for how a person appears, but not so much on the physical, but on the inward beauty. It's a sincere love. It's based on that other person's best interest, and it's a permanent condition. Consider that this same word, agape, is used in Romans, the 5th chapter, and verse 8. But God demonstrated His own love towards us that while what? While we were what? Still sinners, Christ died for us. See, that's the kind of love that husbands are supposed to have for their wives. Now, it shouldn't always have to be this way, but you should love your wife in spite of all of these things, because God demonstrated His love in spite of the fact that we didn't love Him, that we were sinners, and Christ died for us. And just like faith without works is dead, love without actions is also dead. You know, I think the world, maybe if you ask people they wouldn't say this, but I think sometimes love gets just hung up in words, that it's not really about actions. In 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, the chapter about love, right? We begin in verse 4, and it says, "Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. It is not puffed up. Does not behave rudely. Does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Thinks no evil. Does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in truth. Bears all things. Believes all things. Hopes all things. Endures all things." Now, imagine if instead of using the word love there, we replaced your wife with that, okay? We replaced your name and read the section of verses with your name in it, talking about your husband. All right. So imagine a wife. You're reading 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7, and instead of saying love, you say your husband's name. Could you do that? Ben suffers long and is kind. Ben does not envy. Ben does not parade himself, is not puffed up. Ben does not behave rudely, does not seek his own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. You see, if you love your wife, then your wife ought to be able to say those things about you. Because that's the same word here that's being used. The same kind of love that Paul commands husbands to have for their wives is the same kind of love that he talks about here in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Now, consider the comparison to Christ and the church. What did Christ do for the church? He died for the church. And why did he die for the church? Because it was in the best interest of the church, wasn't it? It was in the best interest of the people who make up the church that Christ die for the church. And so if a man loves his wife, like the Bible tells him to, then he's willing to make sacrifices for him. And I suppose that if the situation arises, he ought to be able to lay down his life for his wife. But that's not really what's going to happen to most of us. Most of us won't have that opportunity. Instead, most of us will have the opportunity to make other kinds of sacrifices, and we have the obligation to do that. Let's look at 1 John chapter 3, verses 16 through 18. Now remember, as we read this verse, we're supposed to see in Jesus a picture of husbands and wives, okay, or husbands' relationships to wives. Somebody read 1 John chapter 3, verses 16 through 18.
By this we know of love, because he laid down his life for us. We also ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. But whoever has this world's goods and sees his brother in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? My little children, let us not love in word or in tongue, but in deed and in truth.
All right. So think about the comparison here between how Christ loved the church and what Christ expects of the church, and how husbands ought to love their wives. Particularly there, verses 17 and 18. When you see that your wife has a need and you don't take care of it, then I think God looks at that and says, you don't have the kind of love that I expect of husbands. And then verse 18, don't just love in word or in tongue. See, love isn't just about what you say, it's about what you do. And then finally in Matthew 28, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. I think this is a good thing for all husbands to know, that the prototypical husband, the stereotypical husband, is one who comes home and serve me, right? I'm the master of the house, so serve me. No, that's not what the Bible says. The Bible says that Jesus, who is how we're supposed to look at ourselves as husbands, didn't come to serve, but to be served. Didn't come to be served, but to serve. I got that backwards. So we would all do well to look at the Lord's example. All right, I left you with a question last week about Colossians chapter 3 and 19. So outside of Ephesians 5, there's several other passages that God commands husbands to love their wives. And one of them is Colossians 3 and 19. Someone read that for us. Because I left you with a question to think about.
Husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter toward them.
All right. So we talked about the first half of this verse already when we talked about Ephesians chapter 5. But now let's talk about what the second half of this means. So husbands, we're commanded here to love our wives, which we've talked about. But then we're also told, and do not be bitter towards them. So what exactly does this mean?
Well, from time to time, there's going to be some situations that you're not going to be exactly happy with what your wife did or didn't do. But if you let that build up, and every time she has an incident that doesn't exactly please you the way you want to, and you become bitter, you're going to be in trouble. If you're not to become bitter, you're not to let these things build up.
Yeah, you'll be in trouble with your wife, but I think you'll also be in trouble with God, too. Yeah, too. The idea here about bitterness is to kind of cut or pick. And when we think of it like that, then I think it makes sense here. To be bitter denotes to point out, to sharpen in on, to hone in on. And so a person who's bitter against someone else picks at them, right? They cut at them. And it's so easy for us to do. Sometimes we treat our spouse in ways that we wouldn't treat other people because we have that such a close relationship with our spouse. We think we have, you know, freedom to be blunt or to cut at them in a way that we wouldn't do other people. In James, the third chapter, remember we're told about the tongue beginning in verse 5. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest, a little fire kindles. The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set against our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature, and it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird or reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceeds blessings and cursing. Brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh water. And so when I think about bitterness, when I think about this passage, what does it mean to live with them without bitter? This is what I think. I think it's talking about how we communicate with them. That it would be it's so easy just to lash out when you have those situations that don't go like you, as the husband would expect, or you think it should go, and then you lash out, and this is something we're commanded not to do. And I think this leads very well into this second issue that we'll talk about in a minute. But Eddie, what comments do you have?
Just what does it mean when no man can tame the tongue?
Well,
can we tame our tongue? But here it says we
can't. I think about my own life. Have there been, maybe it's not something like profanity or taking the Lord's name in vain, but have you ever said something that you regret? I think that's probably how we're to understand that no man can tame the tongue. That, you know, out of the heart the mouth speaks, and, you know, we know from Jeremiah that the heart is deceitfully wicked. And sometimes, as hard as we try to not let some of the things that we think come out, they come out.
You know, I think we say things sometimes that may offend somebody, and we don't realize it. You know,
yeah.
But just something that we say.
Yeah. And you know, think about that in the husband and wife relationship. I'm pretty sure, Eddie, I don't know. I've not been married as long as you have, but I'm pretty sure you've probably said something in your marriage that you had no idea Linda was going to take the way that she took it, or you didn't realize it was going to come out the way that it did. And you know, what's the solution there? The solution there is to communicate. To treat your spouse just like you would want her to treat you, because she is you, right? You are one. Okay. I want to, yeah.
Comment. If we dwell on the negative points of our spouse, it's awful easy to become bitter. But if you dwell on the good things, you can love your spouse even though they make mistakes and they do things that don't necessarily always agree with you. But in Philippians it says, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, where things are lovely and have virtue, he says, meditate on these things. So if you think about your partner and all the good things they do for you, that's God.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, you know, someday when you're having a rough day with your spouse, just make a list of all of the good things. It'll be hard at that particular moment to write all the good things. But write all the good things and then write all the bad things. And I guarantee you the good list is going to be much bigger. And here's the reason why. In Genesis chapter 2, the wife, in this case Eve, was presented, I believe, presented to Adam by God, and in a way is a gift from God. You know, here Adam saw, and we'll talk about this in a little bit again, but here Adam saw all the animals and there wasn't anything comparable to him. And so what does God do? God creates a wife for him. And in a way, a wife is a gift from God. And so when you think about your wife that way, your list of things that kind of annoy you go down pretty quick. Okay, I want to talk about one other thing before we talk about the second obligation of husbands. And that is that in this command to love your wife, we find subtle undertones of something else that we see in the Scriptures. And that is that you're to love only your wife. In other words, be satisfied with your wife. Let's go to Proverbs, the 5th chapter. And this is a lengthy passage. And it's a comparison between a harlot, a prostitute, an immoral woman, and your wife. And I'd like someone to read actually the entire chapter because and take special note to verses 15 through 19 in this idea of love only your wife. Be satisfied with your wife. So if someone would read Proverbs chapter 5, beginning in verse 1 through the end of the chapter.
My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion, and your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood. Sharp as a two-edged sword, her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable. You do not know them. Therefore, hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one. Lest aliens be filled with your wealth, and your labors go to the house of the foreigner. And you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed, and say, how have I hated instruction, and my heart despised correction? I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. Drink water from your own cistern and running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in these streets? Let them be only your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he is caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray.
All right, thanks, Eddie. This chapter is just a really good chapter to understand the consequences of not loving your wife only and loving other women. The chapter begins with, my son, pay attention to my wisdom. And I'm sure that there's a lot of wisdom in here that each one of us can glean. But in particular, there in verses 15 through 19, the message here is be satisfied with your wife. Now, the Bible chooses sometimes to use some words that aren't always that pleasant. You know, Samson says, who's plowed with my heifer? And now here the Bible says, drink water from your own cistern. So I don't take offense to it, ladies, but that's the picture, right? Drink water from your own well. God has given you a wife, and as we'll read later on, inside that marriage is the means by which a husband's desires can be fulfilled. Outside of that is wrong. And there's quite a bit of consequences for that. And that's what the first part of the chapter is really speaking about. But be satisfied with your own wife. In Ecclesiastes 9:9, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all the days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you have performed under the sun. So here Solomon says, live joyfully with the with your wife. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 1 through 6. Now concerning the things which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let a man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. So the very same thing that is being talked about in Proverbs chapter 5, this issue of fulfilling your sexual desires, Paul addresses here in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Now, let's look at verse 3. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except with consent for a time, that you may give yourself to fasting and prayer and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. But I say this as a concession, not as a command. And so here we have again this idea that in husbands being commanded to love your wife, love only your wife. Don't love other people in the way that you love your wife. Be satisfied with your wife. And remember that you have an obligation to your spouse to treat her as you would treat yourself. This is brought up again in this passage. All right, other questions about this? I have one other thing to talk about loving your wife. Let's look at 1 Peter chapter 3. Somebody read 1 Peter 3 and 7. This is, again, another one of those passages that gets to this idea of loving your wife, but it describes it in slightly a different way. 1 Peter 3 and 7.
Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives, and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers.
All right. So, husbands, be considerate as you live with them. I think that's a pretty good description. I think probably your New King James reads, dwell with them with understanding. The point here is learn about your wife. That's the message. That's the message that Peter, who we know was married, is giving. You know, sometimes people poo-poo the idea of Paul giving instructions to the married people. Like Paul, the apostle of God, who is God's mouthpiece on earth, can't tell married people how to behave. I find it absurd that people would say, well, you know, Paul wasn't married, so he has no right to say it. Well, it's not Paul, it's God, but God here chooses to use Peter to give this message and says, dwell with them with understanding. Be considerate of them when you live with them. So husbands, learn about your wives. That's the message. What's important to her? What things make her happy? What things does she need to make her happy? And this takes time and effort both. Think about when you first got married. How'd that first year go, right? It went great, didn't it? You're so happy to be married. You were stepping on each other's toes all the time, weren't you? Because marriage is hard, and it takes time to figure out. It takes time for husbands to learn and understand their wives. In Deuteronomy chapter 24, we find a command to the children of Israel about what a husband is not supposed to do after he gets married for an entire year. Remember what it was? What could a man who got married who was of the children of Israel not do for an entire year?
Go to war.
That's right. Go to war. And work is related to that too. Deuteronomy chapter 24 and 5. When a man has taken a new wife, he shall not go to war or be in charge of any business. He shall be free at home 1 year and bring happiness to his wife whom he has taken. Now, that would be great to get married and take a year off just to figure out each other. I mean, there'd be a lot of happiness there, wouldn't there, right? Either that or you drive each other nuts. I don't know. One of the two. But the idea here It's what? Why is the man not going to war? Why is he not taking on any business? What was the reason? So he could be free at home and bring happiness to his wife. He's got a, that's his obligation. That was his job. Bring happiness to his wife. So when it says dwell with them with understanding, look, learn about your wife. Not dwell with them with understanding like, well, you just got to understand they're quirky and they got problems. You know, that no, that's not what this is talking about. It's talking about learning who your wife is, what makes her tick, what's important to her, and most importantly, what brings her happiness. And then we're told to honor your wife. This is about treating your wife with respect. And unfortunately, this is a big problem in our world today, and that is being respectful of our spouse, particularly of our wives. A study by the Surgeon General's office revealed that domestic violence is the leading cause of injury between the ages of in women between the ages of 15 and 44. In fact, it's more common than automobile accidents, muggings, and cancer deaths combined. I don't understand this. I don't get Emily and I've talked about this a bunch. I have I'm not a physically aggressive person anyway, but I still don't understand domestic violence. And I don't understand why men would think that in any reason this would be acceptable. It makes no sense to me. Yet it's the leading cause of injury for women between 15 and 44. Other research has found that half of all women will experience some sort of violence during their marriage, and nearly one-third are battered repeatedly every year. Something like 1.3 million women are physically assaulted by their husbands every year. Domestic violence results in almost 100,000 days of hospitalization and 30,000 emergency room visits and almost 40,000 visits to the emergency to physicians. This is a big deal, and I don't get it. But how can you honor your wife and be physically abusive to her? Dwayne?
Yeah, I'm like you. You know, it's hard to understand how they can be so abusive. I mean, we've seen it here and very close by here what happens. But, you know, you can understand part of it because a marriage is a two-way thing. So part of it is due to the actions of the wife, and jealousy enters into that could cause some energy to go off. So nuts like they do, yeah. You know. But that's just one part. That's not all of it.
Yeah, and is that a reason or is that an excuse? I think
it's an excuse, but yeah. You know, some men are just more jealous. Yeah. You know, and they let that bother them.
And you bring out a good point. All of this is a two-way street, and we're going to talk about the other direction probably next week. But still, think about it like this. As a husband, you're supposed to have the same kind of relationship with your spouse that Christ had with the church. And would Christ ever abuse the church like this? No. No. So think for a minute about how Xerxes treated Vashti, right? We kind of give Vashti the bad rap, but that's not the problem. The problem was Xerxes, right? Ahasuerus. In Esther chapter 1, really the beginning of the chapter is Ahasuerus, he has this big party, right? And at this party, he parades in front of all of the people who have come to see him. He parades all of his wealth. And then after 7 days, after everybody's gotten lots to drink, we see on the seventh day, that in verse 10, the king commands his eunuchs to go get his wife. And in verse 11, this is what it says. Bring Queen Vashti before the king, wearing her royal crown in order to show her beauty to the people and the officials, for she was beautiful to behold. So here, Ahasuerus is displaying all of his wealth, and then decides, you know what, I've got a really beautiful wife. Let me parade her in front of everyone else too. And so, no wonder Vashti refused. The king was treating her like some sort of prized possession to flaunt in front of the people, rather than giving her the honor that was due her. Now, we shouldn't be surprised by this. Xerxes was not a God-fearing man. But instead of parading her, the husband should praise his wife. You know, Sometimes we treat our wives in ways that we wouldn't treat other people, but we're told we ought to praise our wives. Consider what the husband of the virtuous wife does. Proverbs 31:28. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Think about what the other meaning of husband is. It's not a word we use anymore, but what's a husband?
That tends or takes care of livestock or crops.
Yeah, I think it's more more crops than livestock. But yeah, the idea that you're a one who tills the soil. Now, we don't really use this anymore. But in much the same way as a husband in that term takes care of the ground so that crops can grow, husbands ought to do everything they can to help their wives blossom into the women that God would want them to be. Proverbs chapter 12, verse 4. An excellent wife is a crown of her husband, but she who causes shame is like rottenness in his bones. And what's the reason for all of this? Why is it that the husband's supposed to honor his wife? Why is it that the husband is supposed to live with her with understanding, that her prayer, that his prayers be not hindered? I mean, just another example of how our behavior in our physical relationships keys off of our relationship with God. Okay, any other comments about? Oh man, I always run out of time. Okay, any other comments about husbands love your wives?
Well, this business of as to the weaker vessel. Well, who's weaker, the people in the church or Christ? Well, obviously we're weaker, and I think about when Christ went to be crucified. It just boggles my mind that he didn't just strike him dead. I mean, I just think, you know, he had all the power in the world to snap his finger and make them look like nothing. But instead, he, in turn, took it so that better things would come to mankind.
Yeah.
So the husband, in the same way. Yeah, you might be physically stronger. You might be able to beat up your wife, but what's that going to do?
Yeah. Certainly doesn't show love. All right, so the two obligations of husbands, we are moving way slower than what I thought, but that's okay. Husbands are obligated, commanded to love their wives. And if you get that wrong, the next thing, which is husbands are to be the leaders, it's going to be hard to do. So next week, we're going to talk about leadership. And the world doesn't like this. The world doesn't like talking about husbands being the leaders of families, but that's what we're going to talk about next week. So you might take time to look at husbands as leaders. We'll talk about that, and then hopefully we'll get into wives next week as well. All right, let's take a 5-minute break.